With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The case against Karen Reed, it's certainly heating up as we get very close to trial number two. As of this recording, still jury selection supposed to be starting in about a week. We'll see if we get there. Joining me to discuss where this thing is at, especially after the five-part docuseries Body in the Snow, the trial of Karen Reed has dropped on Max and Investigation Discovery, Eric Fattis, defense attorney, former prosecutor. There's a lot of pieces that came out in this docuseries. I know a lot of people initially thinking, oh, this is quite a move by them that they're going to drop this right before the trial. I don't think a lot of people really realize how TV works. When you make something, you have no control over when this thing drops, but HBO does, and I think they decided this is a good time for it. But some of the things in this are a little bit shocking to me. One of the big pieces of contention here that so many have had in the Karen Reed case, it's not even about did she hit him or didn't she hit him? Because, I feel like that's up in the air quite a bit. But I'm not even talking about that today. I'm talking about the character of Karen Reed. And we will talk now today about the blogger that has incited so much hate, so much vitriol, just tore this town apart, tore communities apart, tore relationships apart. And I mean, he's been charged multiple times with intimidating witnesses. And the attorneys for Karen Reed are out there arguing, well, that's not Karen's fault. Karen can't control him. That's nothing to do with it. Turns out Karen's been talking to him every single day for hours on end, and she flat out admits to it in the documentary. I'll play the clip here in just a moment, but knowing that, is that the definition of collusion, Eric?
It certainly seems darn close. And in a high-profile case, it makes sense if there's a narrative going on against you, you want to counter that narrative, but you've got to do it lawfully. You got to make sure you're not doing it in a way that has deception, in a way that is tampering with witnesses, in a way that is influencing a potential future jury.
And that's the thing. I mean, the blogger has flat out said on a megaphone, I'm trying to influence a jury. I mean, he has. And then, of course, he's been charged for doing that. But when you actively have the defendant communicating regularly, like, see, I'm just going to play the clip here. This is what I think was so incensing on the whole thing. Let's take a look.
Turtle Boy on his Twitter calls himself an award-winning journalist. I'm not sure where those awards come from, but his real name is Aiden Carney. He was a history teacher in Worcester County, and then left and became a blogger.
Joining us tonight, our special guest, blogger, social media personality, Aiden Carney, also known as Turtle Boy.
The Karen Reed case really started to blow up when Turtle Boy started shining a light on Karen's innocence.
What we know it to be is a cover-up. It's outrageous, outrageous.
I've been a big fan of Turtle Boy for many years, and me and Karen, we had some discussion about, you know, possibly reaching out to him because we've seen him uncover some massive scandals.
What really caught my attention was a court filing in April about the Google search. And every page I read further, my jaw just dropped.
That 227 Google search was one of those stories that Turtle Boy reported early on in this case, that the people who support Karen Reed latched onto as evidence of a cover-up.
Court paperwork appears to show a link between murder suspect Karen Reed and the blogger known as Turtle Boy, who was—
According to the prosecution, the defense was selectively leaking bits of information for Turtle Boy and sort of guiding him on the path of, hey, this should be your next story, or here's information for a new story.
Defense attorneys have used the media since the dawn of time to forward stories. We wouldn't be in this business if we didn't get leaks and have anonymous sources. So it's definitely a media strategy.
My lawyers told me we could share anything with Turtle Boy as long as it was public, and not for me to do it directly, to go through a third party. And then I started to get nervous about who I was using for a third party. So I eventually just started sending things directly. And then we started talking about the case probably once a day, almost every day, 5-6 days a week.
Your reaction to that as a legal scholar?
Yeah, you know, on the surface, there are certainly aspects of it that might seem problematic to some. You know, as the one correspondent said, defense attorneys sometimes have to use the media to— Yes. —try to get their side out there. And simply giving information to someone is not necessarily problematic. But where it becomes problematic is if Karen Reed has knowledge that Turtle Boy does in fact want to mislead and deceptively influence anybody, and she's feeding into that, and she is also on board with the ultimate outcome, which is that deception and that misleading effect, that's where it potentially becomes problematic. She potentially becomes an accomplice if Turtle Boy is charged and she is complicit.
You mean like this?
Resign, all of you! Resign!
Shame on you!
You are a disgrace to the badge!
It's like a subculture cesspool when it comes to Johnny's case. If you don't believe that Karen's innocent, you become a target. And that's what makes it all so terrifying.
We are chopping these people down one by one and shaming them.
There have been supporters of Karen Reed who'd call them cop killers online, who call their places of work and call them cop killers.
That's a cop killer right there.
They have been stalking the witnesses.
Hey, Jen, how you doing? Fancy seeing you here.
Following them to lacrosse games to do nothing other than intimidate a mother, a family, kids. There are no boundaries.
Brian Albert, Colin Albert, every single person who was in that fight, Ryan Higgins, all of them, Matt McCain.
Poor choice.
They had their lives turned upside down, and if you look at the reality of the story, they were trying to do the right thing in the moment, and this is the thanks they get.
It's just unbelievable. All the people in that house, one by one, picked apart by this mob.
Killers!
Johnny would have been disgusted by the whole thing. This is more than dishonest. I mean, this is vile.
It's unimaginable what my entire family is going through. I am a witness.
That's all I am. I am not on trial. I am a witness. And these people are terrorizing me.
Constant phone calls, emails, awful messages, people emailing my school. Just like a lot of harassment. Can I have a moment, please?
Sure.
It's impossible for me to have any sympathy for any of these witnesses. Definitionally, is it harassing witnesses? Yes, they're witnesses against me in my prosecution. And is he yelling things at them? And is he going up to their front doors and ringing the bell? Yes. But they shouldn't be witnesses. They should have been suspects. So it's not cut and dry.
I'm going to say maybe a regretful statement by Karen Reed to put out there publicly right before your next trial. What did she just do there?
You know, where are her attorneys who are allowing her to speak in such a fashion on a nationally publicized docuseries regarding her own trial? I think it's super problematic because what it shows is she has knowledge of what this guy and his cronies or army, whatever, is doing. And what they're doing appears really similar to witness intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, these witnesses, as Jennifer McCabe said, they didn't ask to be involved in this. They didn't sign up for all of this harassment and everything like that. And you know, Karen Reed appears pretty callous and also pretty kind of in favor of what's going on, which I think gets at least very close to that line of criminality.
Yeah, I was shocked. Just like, and her attorneys are in the damn piece. I mean, again, this is why I think a lot of us thought, oh, this is going to be very pro Karen Reed. I think it paints a pretty just accurate picture of what is going on here on both sides. Cause I'm not all pro prosecution. Again, I think the damn thing, I think it was an accident. I don't think she should be in prison. I don't think she should be charged. I just think there's drunk driving and really horrible behavior here and not enough to really, I think, show any sort of murderous intent, but it's all this stuff after the fact that is so damning to her. Right there, the fact that she is saying, you know, well, they should have been charged. They should have, like, well, woulda, coulda, shoulda, Karen. It's not up to you who's being charged and who's not. Another part in this documentary, she also goes, it's Jen McCabe or me. No, it's not. Jen McCabe's not on trial. You are. There's a lot of reasoning down here in her mind of justifying the actions of this other guy. But it's not her that's doing it. And it was very interesting the other day to see Alan Jackson and Yannetti up there going, it's not Karen's fault. Whatever he does, it's not her fault. I'm assuming they were kind of feeling the pressure of knowing that this doc was not going to be all that favorable to Karen Reed. Could this put her in some legal trouble? Could this influence the start of the next trial? Or what could some of these statements do to her?
You know, one big issue that jumps out at me is there's a rule that's a hearsay exception called admission by a party opponent. And so what that means is that the prosecution can put forth to the jury any statement Karen Reed has made that is relevant to that trial. And so where she is, you know, demonstrating this sort of callous disregard for these witnesses being harassed and intimidated, not only is it a terrible look for her, but on top of that, it verges on being kind of underhanded and shady in terms of how she's dealing with the court process, not necessarily how a jury might expect an innocent person to act.
Here's another look at the two sides of Karen Reed, as noted in that new documentary that's out on Max and Investigation Discovery. Let's take a look.
I think there's two versions of Karen Reed inside the courtroom. There's the version when the jury's present and the version when they're not. And when the jury is not present, Karen Reed is often looking back and talking to her family, who's sitting right behind her, laughing, making small talk with her attorneys. But when the jury is there, she is often very stoic, lips pursed to a degree, looking straight forward at the witness.
Before the jury comes in, she's posing for pictures with Yannetti and Jackson and these spectators who get to come in, and those are getting posted all over social media.
It was really quite unprofessional, the way they all carried on. A lot of giggling, a lot of fun.
Yes.
Well,
John's family has to watch that.
There's a claustrophobic feel in that room. The defendant is maybe 4 or 5 feet away from us, so it was impossible to not notice Karen's demeanor. In between witnesses, during witness testimony, she would look over and mumble something to her counsel, and then she'd smile or laugh or turn around to her parents and roll her eyes.
Excuse me? This is funny, Ms. Reed? All right, we're done.
I'm sure the O'Keefes hate every minute of this. I'm sure they hate every time I turn around, but does not bother me sitting that close to John's family. I've done nothing wrong.
Despite very brutal evidence provided, where jurors were crying, there was not a single hint of emotion from Karen. Not a single moment did she show a modicum of sadness or loss. And that is telling.
Reaction to that.
The jury is always looking at how a defendant is presenting during the trial, how they're reacting to certain evidence. And, you know, what could happen over time is in the next trial is that the prosecution could introduce some statements by Karen Reed that look really bad. And then Karen Reed's team could try to refute that by saying, no, she's pure as the driven snow and whatever. And then in rebuttal, the prosecution might be able to bring up this demeanor stuff, that this videotaped reactions that we saw there to show like, no, she, you know, is not reacting how you would expect an innocent person to react. She's sort of cavalier. She's sort of acting in jest at certain points. But you know, there is also a humanistic element that this case has gone on for years and you can't expect her to be dour the entire time.
True. And I can understand that to a certain extent where it's, you know, she is fighting for her life and you got to give her that. But at the same point, a life is gone and this family is sitting there crying and you're just so callously like, I don't care what they think or feel. Like, okay, like part of this, her case has been based on the callousness of an officer of Proctor, and who's now been fired, of the horrible things he was saying, of the callous, cold things he was saying seemingly off the cuff when he thought he was just with his buddies talking. And it doesn't excuse any of it. She's sitting there talking to the Unsolved Mysteries doc crew, knowing this is going to go out there saying these sorts of things, knowing how hurtful. I mean, I think anyone would understand how hurtful that is unless you don't possess empathy, which I'm wondering if Karen Reed might be a bit lacking in, or just it doesn't process up there, because this is just, I don't know. I mean, it's shocking to have that little self-awareness of yourself, especially when you're in this high profile of a situation. Are they just drinking up the free Karen Reed Kool-Aid a bit too much and they've just gotten drunk on it?
Tony, you know, certainly out of touch, aloof. How can she not understand the impact that some of those statements and some of those and her demeanor is going to have on other people? And on top of that, you know, it hurts her defense because they sort of had this or were able to establish this sense that, hey, the government was being kind of cruel. Like they're being kind of underhand and shady and really big jerks about this and the way they're talking about Karen Reed, that kind of thing. And oh, she's just this little innocent person who did nothing wrong. But this is a counterbalance to that. This undercuts that notion by showing that Karen Reed might have some personality issues. And the jury is starting to feel a lot less sorry for her.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the witness list come up of who they're going to be calling, and it looks like, you know, the same folks from last time for the most part. But you got this now. This can be countered. I mean, everything with Proctor can now be countered with, I'd almost say, worse things. Worse, more hurtful ways of looking at this and handling this. And again, it's like we're not even arguing the principle anymore of did she or did she not hit him? It's like the character of Karen Reed, which is not on trial, but it sure says a lot, which I think inadvertently could damn her. Way more than she needed to be damned for something that I don't think can necessarily be proven that she actually hit him. This is Yeah. Let's talk about Proctor for a second. Obviously, he's been fired finally. How does that weigh on any of this? And how do you think they're going to try and spin that into this trial? How will it affect this thing going forward?
You know, I think the prosecution is going to object to the fact of the firing coming into evidence, but I think it's probably coming in because he was fired based in part on how he handled the investigation and just this case. And so I think the jury's going to get to hear about that. And that looks pretty darn bad mm-hmm. when you have, you know, a high level law enforcement official who worked on a case who's trying to sell you an idea, get fired from their job because of how they horribly mishandled aspects of the case. The jury's going to hate it.
Yeah. In that documentary as well, we're not even going to go through all these other clips, but there's a lot of contradicting statements in here of her initially saying, you know, did I hit him? How did I hit him? All that, every variation of it to then, and still somewhat seemingly questioning that it seems in some moments of this doc where it's not even necessarily super old footage. It's for the doc. And then, you know, just as fast going, I'm 100% sure I did not hit John O'Keefe. But at the same time going, I don't know, I might not have known. I had the music blasting. All these logical reasons why she maybe didn't know. I mean, the fact that she also didn't remember dropping him off initially, and now her story is I saw him walk in the house, which that was never part of the story, but now that's the story. Again, it contradicts herself quite a bit, and these are contradictions that did not necessarily come to light in the first trial either. So all of that is, I guess, up for grabs as well.
It seems like she thinks she's making her case better, but she's actually making it worse. She thinks she's making it better by saying, hey, I 100% did not hit him. But I think it might be more believable to folks, you know, her prior position where she's like, hey, I don't think I did, but I don't know for sure. And there was stuff going on. It was chaotic and horrible and traumatic and everything else. And gosh, I just don't know what happened. That seems more human and believable than someone who was being sort of obstinate in some position. Oh, 100% didn't hit him. Well, you don't know for sure.
Was the biggest mistake in this whole case, her defense, going down this road of they beat him up in the house and they drug his body out to the end of the yard, again, without much evidence? Wouldn't it have just been stronger to say she doesn't remember? Look at the history of these two. Look at their love for each other. Yes, you know, it's a volatile relationship, but there wasn't necessarily abuse or anything. It was just kind of coming to its time, but no one here is showing any evidence that she was capable or had any intention to kill or hurt him. Wouldn't it have been just stronger to be like, she doesn't know, she doesn't remember, she was blackout drunk. Yeah, she should be held for drunk driving without a doubt. But there's not enough evidence to show a vehicle strike either. Wouldn't that have just been just as strong of an argument rather than going down this fantastical road? I feel like going down that road is what is really going to hurt Karen Reed more than even the damn death of John O'Keefe of spinning this tale.
In determining defense strategy, you have to consider believability. And it's easy to get wrapped up in like, oh, is there this conspiracy where these cops somehow beat up and killed a fellow cop and left him out in the cold to die? And they're trying to pin it on his girlfriend. You know, that might be intriguing in a sense, but that's a tough sell to a jury. That's a high bar to try to convince somebody that happened, especially when there's really an absence of demonstrable evidence supporting it. And so, gosh, it might make more sense to go with something that is more simple, more believable, that would resonate with these jurors much more than this fantastical story that they're trying to sell.
And I was surprised of just how this all kind of came about too, because it's a story of this gravelly voice that comes in and has this idea that you need to look at the people in the house. Okay, I can get that, especially there had been a lot of issues with the police in that area for quite some time. So I get one going, look at them too. But when there's nothing there, we go down this extreme road and she's so hell-bent on oh my gosh, this is what actually happened. We know what happened. It's her choice, ultimately, what road they go down, is it not? So she must have chosen this path. It wasn't just the attorneys going, hey, I think we should do this.
It's usually a collaborative decision. Ultimately, the biggest decisions in a trial do rest with the defendant themselves. Now, the lawyer has input regarding legal strategy, but what you really risk with something like this is the jury feeling like you're trying to pull the wool over their eyes. You're trying to deceive them. You're trying to trick them into thinking something for which there is not sufficient evidence, likely. And that can cause a jury to react, overreact, in a worse way against the defendant as opposed to helping the defendant.
Here is her reaction. Just a short clip, basically right at the beginning of all this, when they started going down the road of third party culprits. Let's take a look.
It feels we're the only ones fighting for the truth of what happened to John O'Keefe.
Karen, just to be clear, you didn't do it.
We know who did it, Steve. We know. And we know who spearheaded this cover-up. You all know.
Yes, we do.
And no, she didn't do it. No, she didn't do it. This is an innocent woman.
No, she doesn't say no. You didn't do it. And no, she didn't do it. You forgot that part, Karen. No, she didn't do it. It felt like a movie. I mean, it literally looks like a movie. You couldn't ask for a better clip like that. But just very much, we know who did it, Steve. Really? Do we?
That's the thing is you can overplay your hand in the legal game, and you know, maybe you have evidence that casts doubt on what happened and who did what. That's much more acceptable than saying, oh no, we know who did it for sure, but then, you know, lo and behold, at the trial, that's not really how it shook out.
It's gonna be interesting to see how this one shakes out with round two.
Craving non-stop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.